Do you want to finish your career there? Do you want to be a lifer in Green Bay? I mean, it's kind of been your team so far.
Yeah, so far it's definitely been my team. I said last year, I didn't know if that was actually possible. I still feel like that's kind of where we're at. I mean, I don't know that a lot of that's in my hands, but I guess we'll kind of see as we go.
That was Aaron Rodgers talking to our own Kenny Mayne a little over a month ago, and maybe offering a hint of the soap opera that has since consumed the Green Bay Packers and this entire sport. Today, we bring you the view from inside Green Bay to find out exactly when this relationship soured, whether it can ever be repaired, and whose side an army of cheeseheads is taking in the divorce. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, May 7th. This is ESPN Daily. Rob Domofsky, our man in Green Bay, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
It's great to be with you, Pablo.
So how long have you covered the Packers now? How many years?
Well, I've covered them for 24 years, but having lived through the Brett Favre saga and now the Aaron Rodgers saga, I feel like I've aged even more than that.
So a quarter century of covering this franchise, Rob. You live in Wisconsin. You're right there.
Yeah.
Where does what your life is like right now, where does that rank in the annals of these last 24 years?
Yeah, it's definitely intense. Like, I hang up with one radio show or one editor at ESPN, and I go to my phone and I have like 13 more either requests, messages, and also while trying to find out information, you know, like even from, you know, NFL people. And, you know, I had one scout that used to work for the Packers and is now with another team basically text me, what's going on up there?
And so I imagine that you're at the point where like just the vibration of a phone sparks some amount of anxiety in your brain.
Luckily, I've got like two portable chargers here next to me because my phone is running out of juice.
So I don't want to waste the juice that you've allotted for us here, Rob. So I just want to try to start at the beginning here, which is actually, I think, hard to pinpoint because you could maybe most obviously point to last Thursday just before the draft as Adam Schefter broke the news that Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay. But there's also the point a year ago when the Packers drafted Jordan Love, Rodgers' heir apparent at quarterback. But then there also seem to be many, many points in between. So as the guy who is actually on this beat, who is on the ground, where does all of this start for you?
Look, we've known for a year, Pablo, right, that something wasn't right. Something was off, that things could come to a head depending on, you know, what the Packers wanted to do, what their timeline was with Jordan Love. And Rodgers had even said, you know, as he was marching his way to the MVP, that, you know, I've probably disrupted their timeline. You know, I've probably made things a little harder for them based on the way that I have played. And then, you know, at the end of the season, the week of the NFC Championship game against Tampa, he said his future is a beautiful mystery.
But all that other stuff, Rob, is stuff that I'm just not going to focus on. You know, because to me, it is a beautiful mystery what happens down the line.
And then the day after the season, or maybe it was even right after the game, he lumped himself into players with uncertain futures.
A lot of guys' futures are, you know, uncertain, you know, myself included.
I guess what I wasn't sure of was just what his level of unhappiness was. To me, I always thought, and even from talking to him, that he was, you know, prepared to play one more year, even though he wanted a longer-term commitment from them and didn't want to be a lame duck quarterback. The part that surprised me was that he's willing to go this far, because I thought he was, like, resigned to the fact that it could be a year-to-year thing. But clearly, he has made it known that he's not going to accept that.
Yeah, I want to parse all of the kind of coy phraseology around this, the beautiful mysteries, the text messages that have been leaked. I want to get to all of that, Rob. But just on the Jordan Love thing, like from the outside, that's the obvious tipping point here. They draft Jordan Love instead of one of the wide receivers that Rodgers has been begging for from this front office in the draft for years. So the immediate consequence of that pick, Rob, is it as seismic as I understand? Is it even more so? What was your viewpoint on that?
Well, here's the thing. It's not just the draft pick, I think, Pablo, that was the issue. It was that I think it caught Rodgers by surprise. Like, for example, Courtney Cronin, our Vikings reporter, reported over the weekend that the Vikings told Kirk Cousins, hey, we might take a quarterback. You know, we might even take Kellen Mond. It sounds like, from what I've heard, the Bears even told Andy Dalton, you know, we might take a quarterback. And, you know, if you're Aaron Rodgers, you probably think that I deserve that courtesy too. And general manager Brian Gutekunst, who's the one who makes the call on all these roster moves, admitted over the weekend that he definitely made a mistake in communication by not bringing Rodgers into the loop on that.
The draft's an interesting thing. It can kind of unfold differently than you think it's going to unfold, and it happens pretty fast. But certainly, I think looking back on it, certainly where we sit today, there could have been some communication things that we did better.
But if you knew you were even thinking about getting Jordan Love, as even as he starts, you know, being available as the draft unfolds, knowing what you know about Aaron Rodgers and how he is, you probably need to make that phone call or that text message and just say, hey, look, we're going to take him. We think he's really good. We think he can provide us with the next 10 to 15 years of quarterback stability, just like you did when Brett was here, and explain it to him that way. And that conversation never happened. And I think ultimately it might be that more than the Jordan Love pick itself, Pablo, that sort of set him down this path.
Yeah. What is your understanding, Rob? Because I have a sense from afar of Aaron Rodgers as someone who has a long memory, somebody who does not forgive quite so easily. What's your sense of what he was saying to the people in his life after that pick was made in terms of how that all transpired in the way that you outlined?
I remember talking to someone who has known Rodgers since he came into the league. And this was that night. This was the night of the first round. And he told me that Rodgers is going to be, quote, irate about this pick. Mm. And he also said that Rodgers is going to use this to light a fire under his you-know-what. And guess what? Both things were true.
Yes.
He was irate, and he went out and played like the MVP that he was, and both of those things ended up being 100% true.
So the way that Rodgers played, Rob, just the psychoanalysis of it, I mean, to me, it's like a brilliant move if, in fact, you were prepared for all of the consequences. Like, this is how we're going to inspire our particular breed of superstar franchise quarterback, except that the dominoes continue to fall, and it makes me think, okay, there was a lot of unintended consequence here.
Yeah, and one of those unintended consequences is probably how much Rodgers now feels empowered, right? Like, because he was in a super vulnerable position a year ago when they made the pick. Because look, he didn't play great in 2019. I mean, they were 13-3 under Matt LaFleur the first year, but it wasn't like Rodgers was tearing it up. But now he goes out and what was it, 48 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. And so he feels empowered, and that, and he should. Like, I mean, he's earned that by going out and showing them that, look, I may be 37 years old, but I had my best year, or one of my best years ever. And we were on the brink of the Super Bowl, if not for, you know, maybe their poor cornerback play, David Bakhtiari, their all-pro left tackle, tearing his ACL right before the playoffs, and some questionable in-game coaching decisions. If not for all those, we might have been back in the Super Bowl.
So those questionable in-game coaching decisions, Rob, most notably what happened at the end of that NFC Championship game this past January, which I think inside Aaron Rodgers' head, he might phrase a bit more harshly than questionable.
Yeah, you're right. And is that a part of this? Maybe. I mean, did they take the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands on 4th and 8, a 4th and goal from the 8-yard line with 2 minutes left in the game to kick the field goal? Sure they did. And Rodgers even said, he goes, well, I might have done something different on 3rd down if I knew we weren't going to go for it, if we weren't in 4-down territory.
I'm a little surprised they didn't actually go for it on 4th down there.
Well, you're down 8, you get 3, and now you're down 5. You got a couple of timeouts, the 2-minute warning.
The analytics basically say it was a toss-up. But when you're putting the ball back in Tom Brady's hands and trusting your defense, which hasn't been good, trusting the referees, which maybe weren't great, that's a lot of variables that say, you know, why not go for it right here on 4th down?
Yeah, so Matt LaFleur would be the guy who is on the other end of the pushback in the NFC Championship game scenario you just detailed. But I want to explain for those who don't totally understand it, because I'm among them, Rob, how exactly the power structure of the Packers really works day to day. They don't have an owner that is anything like conventional sports ownership. Explain how it all works.
The fact that they don't have a single owner can be a blessing and it can be a curse. They are a publicly owned franchise. But what does that mean? Well, it's meaningless stock, essentially. It's a piece of paper that the fans can put on their wall and say, I own the team. But they have no power, okay? None whatsoever. The power structure is a 7-member executive committee plus I believe it's a 45-member board of directors. Most of these people are local business people, even politicians. Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball at one time, was on the Packers board of directors. Right now, it's made up of mostly local businessmen and women. And Mark Murphy is the president of the Packers. He essentially has appointed all the people on the executive committee. In some sense, it's good because there's not an impulsive owner, but Dan Snyder, who's just making these impulsive decisions. On the flip side, there's not a Robert Kraft or a Jerry Jones that step in and say, look, this is our guy. This is how we're doing it. You know, that's the way it's going to be. They've always let the general manager make the football decisions and the head coach make the head coaching decisions.
So if you're power ranking the people that Aaron Rodgers is beefing with, Rob, within that power structure, the obvious top of the totem pole would be who?
It's Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, because look, he's the one that made the decision to draft Jordan Love. He's the one that made the decision to cut Rodgers' great friend, Jordy Nelson, and trusted receiver. He's even the one who made the decision to cut Jake Kumerow. You might say, who's Jake Kumerow? Well, Jake Kumerow was the number 4 receiver on the team a couple of years ago. Rodgers went on a Sirius XM radio show the day before roster cuts this past summer and said, hey, I feel really good about our top 4 receivers, Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Jake Kumerow.
Jake Kumerow has been such a solid performer for us for the last couple of years. You know, I love his reliability. I think he's a fantastic, steady player.
The next day, they cut Jake Kumerow. Rodgers then made a comment later in the year where he was asked about one of his receivers, and he made a somewhat, you know, snide remark. He said, look, I'm not going to say about anything about him because the last receiver I made something about, a comment about, they cut him, and now he's in Buffalo.
Not going to stomp for anybody. Last time I stomped for a player, you end up going to Buffalo. So
his beef certainly could be with Mark Murphy, the president, as well, because Mark Murphy could have stepped in as Brian Gutekunst's boss and said, you know what, we are not picking Jordan Love. I don't think we should do this. This would be a mistake. Murphy certainly could have made that move. He didn't because he lets his general manager make football decisions, which I ultimately think, Pablo, is a really good thing, having football people make football decisions. But in this case, you know, maybe if it was more of a Robert Kraft situation, he might have stepped in.
Yeah, we're describing, the more you talk, Rob, we're describing the autopsy of a relationship in which there are all of these different ingredients. There are anecdotes that are viewed in that sort of Rashomon way. Like, there are so many different perspectives on it, but we know the outcome is that there is a relationship that feels broken. And I'm just curious, out of all of that, is there a tipping point? Is there something that pushed Rodgers over the edge such that we now find ourselves where we are right now?
It sounds like this offseason they needed to get their salary cap in shape. They were way over the cap. They restructured a lot of deals. When they came to Rodgers, they could have restructured his deal so they gave him a bunch of new money, gave him a bunch of money up front. It would have kind of ensured that they couldn't cut him next year or the year after. Like, it would have given him more security. That's what he wanted, and they said, we're not doing that. We'll give you something short term. And he became upset by that. And then when they finally came around and offered him a lucrative extension that would have both given him more money now and made it harder for them to move on after this season, he was so mad at that point that he said, forget it.
All right, Rob, after the break, I want to take a closer look at how the Packers themselves have handled this entire situation, and I want to try and discern how this is actually going to end.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Rob, when you're trying to apportion guilt here, and that is unfortunately the job I'm tasking you with right now.
Yeah, I don't know that I have time to think about who's guilty, but okay, I'll let you go ahead.
But look, as an outsider, I look at this and I'm just like, man, your number one job in all of this is to just keep Aaron Rodgers on your team, because from there, all good things happen. Without him, you end up in all sorts of unknowns that are going to be less good. That's my simplistic interpretation of it.
No, I get it. I think there's something to that. But as you know, there are two sides to everything.
And so the other side of this, Rob, if you can make the case for the Green Bay Packers in terms of them wanting to maintain and preserve their power, separate and apart from Aaron Rodgers' wishes, what is their case there?
There is no question that Aaron Rodgers deserves special treatment. He's not the 25th guy on the roster. He's the number one guy on the roster. He's the number one guy in the league. Your success is more tied to Aaron Rodgers than anybody. I get it. But over Aaron Rodgers' history, he's had gripes with Ted Thompson, the guy who drafted him, don't forget, Ted Thompson, for not signing free agents. He became frustrated that they didn't sign enough free agents. And in fact, Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy sort of created this mutual bond where they got closer because of both of them being frustrated with Ted Thompson, right? Well, okay, then Ted Thompson gets pushed out. They hire Brian Gutekunst, who is more active in free agency. I mean, look, he went out and spent $180 million in signing bonus and guaranteed money on Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Billy Turner, and Adrian Amos 2 years ago in free agency. But now he's the bad guy, right? Rodgers wanted, he grew tired of McCarthy. He wanted McCarthy out. They got rid of McCarthy. I mean, like, at some point, how many things can you do because it's what your quarterback wants? And maybe the right answer is all of them. Maybe you should do them all because he's that special. And again, it's different on who you are in the organization. If you're Matt LaFleur and the coaches, it's win now. If you're Brian Gutekunst and the general manager, it's win now and win 10 years from now. And if they felt like Jordan Love was the guy that was going to continue this incredible run of quarterback play, because it is. Who else has 25, 30 years of sustained quarterback play at the highest level? Nobody. If you felt like your job and your legacy is ultimately not if you win another Super Bowl now, but if in 10 to 15 years from now, you're still a Super Bowl contender, then you make the pick. So we keep going back to Jordan Love and that decision, Pablo. But ultimately, that's what this is all about. And that's why we're having this conversation.
So I was, like everybody else, inhaling the news that there were leaked text messages from Aaron Rodgers' group chat, in which he referred to Brian Gutekunst, the aforementioned general manager, as Jerry Krause. That would be the very unflatteringly known general manager of the Chicago Bulls. That would make Aaron Rodgers Michael Jordan. That would bring all sorts of other metaphors and parallels onto the table. What did you think when you heard that?
That's not my reporting or even ESPN's reporting, but I have no doubt that it's probably true. I was not surprised when I saw that.
It's so deliciously petty, Rob. I mean, it's perfect in that way.
But like if you heard Brett Favre on ESPN Milwaukee Radio this week, he likes Aaron. They're in a good place. But he essentially said, knowing how far he's willing to take this, he said, yeah, I'm not surprised that Aaron has come to this point.
I think I know Aaron fairly well, and honestly, I just don't see him coming back and just saying, all right, let's bury the hatchet. I don't see that happening. If there's not a trade, my gut tells me that he'd rather sit out than play.
Aaron is, he never forgets a grudge. He's an all-pro grudge holder, chip on his shoulder. It's part of what makes him great. He's off the charts smart. He rarely ever says anything that he hasn't thought through publicly. Now, what he says privately and whether he intended that to ever get out is a different thing. He is one of the smartest, if not the smartest guys in the room. And, oh, by the way, he'll let you know it.
Yeah. On the Favre thing, Rob, because you were there for all of that, and that would have been the high water mark as soap opera is concerned for any normal reporter, I would say. How is the situation similar to what happened there? And also, how is it very different?
Yeah, I would say, let's start with the differences. When they were going to draft quarterback and they drafted Rodgers, Brett Favre had been 2, 3, 4 years into his annual waffling about, am I going to come back? Am I going to retire? And the Packers had grown a little tired of him. I mean, there were some times, Pablo, where I think it was like April or May before he informed the team that he was going to play the next year. So after the 2007 season, which was the NFC Championship game, Favre threw the interception against the Giants in overtime, and the Giants ended up going on and kicking the field goal in overtime and winning the game. They basically wanted a decision in February because, look, they had had Rodgers for, you know, 3 years. If Favre was ready to retire, they were ready to go all in with Rodgers, and they wanted an answer. So they pressed him for an answer, and his answer in February was, I don't want to play. I'm not going to play. And if you know Brett, he's just going to take a long time, and he's going to waffle and go back and forth. And that's what happened. So that's why I think it's different, because they had a quarterback who wasn't even sure about his own future from year to year. And in Rodgers, I mean, this is a guy who not only said he wanted to play into his 40s, and not only said I can do it like Tom Brady did, but that I want to do it here in Green Bay, Wisconsin. That's the part of it that I think is so different about the setup and the entrance of the new quarterbacks into it. Now, the similarities were, they're both incredibly strong-headed personalities. I remember talking to Mike Holmgren a couple of years ago, just what it's like to coach, you know, an elite quarterback. And heck, he coached Montana and Young out in San Francisco when he was an assistant. He coached Favre here. And he said, look, it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because you have a guy that's going to do things that almost nobody else can do. But it's a curse because it's a guy who is incredibly hard-headed, can be difficult to coach, can be stubborn. Those are really hard guys to manage. And it's, again, you take the good with the bad.
You mentioned Tom Brady just then, and I'm just curious how much you think Tom Brady's success in Tampa Bay, Rob, how much that informs Rodgers' worldview at this point.
Oh, I think it has to, especially considering how much he, you know, I don't want to say idolizes because they're friends, but admires Brady and what he's done. I mean, I remember going back 6, 7 years ago when Rodgers patterned his diet after Tom Brady. You know, Tom had his own chef, and they play every year in that Tahoe celebrity golf outing Rodgers and Brady do, and they hang out. You know, he came back from one of those years basically trying to emulate his diet. And I remember it being a big headline on a story I wrote, and kind of a fun story about how Rodgers admitted that he cut cheese out of his diet. You know, the quarterback of the cheeseheads is no longer eating
dangerous,
cheese,
right? A dangerous admission.
It was a fun story, but it was also, that was born. If you go back and find that story, I guarantee you there was some reference in there to Tom Brady and his diet. So the fact that he saw that and the way Brady was able to, you know, bring all of his guys that he wanted to Tampa probably excited Rodgers. Again, the difference, though, and no two situations are the same, is that Brady was at the end of his contract, right, with the Patriots. He was a free agent. It was his choice where he was going to go. Rodgers has 3 years left on his contract. Makes it a lot harder.
Yeah, you just described, I think, cutting cheese out of your diet when you're the Packers quarterback. That's the literal definition of irony, Rob. That's even before we account for all of the beef that Rodgers has now been consuming, which adds yet more iron into all of this recipe. But the fans in all of this, Rob, you're there, right? You're there. You get to talk and hear from these people. Right. How does it all break down in terms of which side people are on?
Yeah, so in 08, it was super, super pro-Favre. I mean, fans loved the guy. I mean, it was a different time. There was no social media. Brett did things that NFL players could never get away with now. Brett was downtown on Washington Street drinking beers, doing shots, pouring shots in to people's mouths. I mean, he'd go behind a bar and I was younger then, so I would be out in the small town. You'd go to the same places. And that was Brett, you know. And
he was just a kid out there even at the bar.
He was. And he'd get behind the bar and pour drinks, and it was Brett. But I think my point is that everybody in town and in the state, they just felt like they lived with him. I mean, think about it. When he had got up there and admitted that he was addicted to painkillers and he's having the emotional press conference, he opened up. When his dad died the night before the Monday night game in Oakland, people felt like they were grieving with him. Because you know what? Irvin Favre was a fixture. Irvin Favre had radio shows in town. Those were kind of things that allowed people to know Favre and love Favre. Now, here we are, you know, decades later, and the world is different, and Rodgers is much more guarded. And you know what? I'm not saying that one's the right way and one's the wrong way. It's just you have to live how you feel comfortable living. And Aaron never, it would appear, felt comfortable in that kind of a setting. So does that mean he's not as beloved because of it? It might. They love him because he's, you know, a great football player, but they don't know him to the degree that they knew Favre. Again, another difference, though, is Favre ultimately wanted to be here, and Aaron ultimately doesn't want to be here. And look, I'm not from Wisconsin. I grew up in Chicago, but I have lived here for 24, almost 25 years now. And if I've learned one thing about people from Wisconsin, if someone doesn't want to be in their place, they take that personally. And maybe that's everywhere. People here take it personally if you don't want to be here. The baseball reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel was at a minor league baseball game in Appleton, which is about a half hour down the road. And he tweeted that there was an ad on the scoreboard for one of the local car dealerships that Rodgers endorses. And Todd Rosiak, this reporter, tweeted that there was a smattering of boos in this minor league stadium when Rodgers showed up on the video screen. That would have never happened if that was Favre.
So if you were to describe the climate right now locally, Rob, in terms of, and I know this is not a scientific exercise, this is very much in the realm of political polling that is more anecdote than science, but how would you describe the mood towards Aaron Rodgers right now?
Yeah, I'm going to give you my incredibly unscientific poll. I have not been out of the house very much because this week has been one SportsCenter get up, NFL Live hit after another, but I did sneak out on Sunday morning to play golf. And then I walked to the driving range at like 8 a.m. for an 8:30 tee time. And there were about eight guys on the driving range at Wander Springs Golf Course where I play. And in an unscientific poll of those eight people, six of them basically took the, if Rodgers doesn't want to be here, they should move on. They shouldn't count out of this guy. Now, hey, unscientific, but on the driving range at Wander Springs Golf Course in Greenleaf, Wisconsin, it was definitely not in favor of Rodgers.
I love that we're taking exit polls after the golf course. That's amazing. That's amazing.
That's all I got. That's all I've got.
We will take your research, Rob, but just knowing that that's the climate around this, what is going to happen here? I mean, I know you can't predict the future, but what's your best educated guess on how this is going to play out?
Yeah, at this point, Pablo, I don't know how he walks it back. Like, with all the stuff that has gotten out there, whether it was of his control or not his control, this would be really hard to just walk back and come back to the, you know, to Lambeau Field and say, just kidding. You know, I just think that's going to be really difficult. There's obviously some key moments, you know, from a serious football nature, some key dates that are worth watching. The next mandatory thing is the mini camp in June. And if he doesn't show up for that, he's subject to fines. Then now we get to training camp. And does he show up for training camp? And if not, you're fined $50,000 a day. Ultimately, how long does this go? I don't know. One of the key dates here is June 1st, and it's because of the salary cap. And not to get into all capologist on you, but if you wait till after June 1, you're allowed to prorate some of the remaining signing bonus. Right now, if they traded them, they would basically lose cap space. If they waited till after June 1, they would pick up a net gain of $16 million in salary cap space. So at this point, I mean, I don't think anything's going to happen June 2nd. I just think it's going to take a lot longer than that. But call me back on June 2nd, and then we can talk realistically about a trade.
So given that framework, where might he land? What are the odds that he ends up back in Green Bay? Give me the array of probabilities that your brain currently understands.
Yeah, so this quote has been attached to me ever since I said this on ESPN Radio over the weekend. Dari Noka asked me what percent chance I thought there would be that Rodgers is a Green Bay Packer again, and I said less than 5%. I've seen nothing in the last week to make me change that. He's dug in. Now the question is, do the Packers ultimately give in and trade him because they realize that he's never going to play for them and they might as well get something for him? Or do they just say, all right, then you sit out. You're going to lose your $14 million base salary this year. Oh, and oh, by the way, you still have 3 years left on your contract. Your signing bonus divided by the number of years that you haven't played, you owe us $30 million. So could get to that.
So let's get personal about just how this is going to impact you, Rob, for a second here. The rest of the way, what do you expect your life to be like as you monitor phones and headlines and gossip?
Yeah, so I will just tell you this real quick. My kids play AAU basketball for a local club. I was driving my son to practice Monday, I think it was, and it just happens to be about a mile from Aaron Rodgers' house. I took just a slight detour, Pablo, one block out of my way just to see if there was a for sale sign in front of Aaron Rodgers' house. And there was not. I tell you that anecdote because that's what my life's going to be like till this is resolved. It's little, every little thing like that that you wouldn't even think of is worth checking into.
Rob Dabowski, thank you for giving us the view from the ground and from the yards of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
You got it. It might be worth a trip just to roll through town, just to kind of gauge the mood on the street, because everyone in Green Bay, Wisconsin has an opinion about this.
Up next, an appreciation for the toughest job in sports.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. I was an idiot. Now, I'm less of an idiot having spent this entire pandemic with my wife and our 14-month-old daughter, meaning I got to learn what nursing a child is actually all about. But before these last 14 months, I was definitely an idiot because I had never considered, in actuality, the details of how a mom's life is constantly disrupted by the production of milk. And how that milk needs to keep getting drained out one way or another at risk of pain and or embarrassment and or infection. No matter what job that mother might have or what championship game she might be competing in. As Adia Barnes, the coach of the University of Arizona women's basketball team, recently explained on our friend Julie Foudy's podcast, Laughter Permitted.
There's possibly another first in there. And that is you pumping at halftime of a national championship game. I don't know if we know if that's officially the first, but so good. And when Holly Rowe says it coming out of halftime.
She was late coming out at halftime because she's back in the locker room pumping. She's still a breastfeeding mother, and they have to warm up the bottle with the heat packs that are here on the sideline. She is doing it all. And for those of you who think this is too much information, I'm just going to tell you this. Let's normalize working mothers and all that they have to do to make it all happen.
Okay, let me tell you what's going on. So we do that all the time. Like, we're women, like, you know, we have babies, like, we pump. Okay, that's what we do.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, I had to pump because I didn't have time before the game. So normally I always pumped, like, I kept the last 25 minutes and I pumped. I talked to the team, I had a routine, and I pumped so then I wouldn't have pain during the game. So mm-hmm. for the championship game, I had media stuff. There wasn't really a space. I didn't have time. So I didn't have time to pump. So I was like, I'll be okay. Like, let me just kind of just suck it up. Like, I don't have time anyway. So I got to deal with it. So during the game, I was like, ooh. Like,
you could feel you know, it too. Like, yeah.
I got to probably pump for a second. I didn't really know. It's like kind of the end of the second quarter. And I was like, I probably need to pump for 5 minutes. So I didn't want, like, on national television with like 5 million people watching, like, to have wet spots.
Yeah. So I was like, that's real. Yeah.
Yeah, it's real.
So it comes out. When you don't, you're like, oh, I'm bursting. It's coming.
Yeah, and I don't want to, like, touch me. It's like, you know, like, you see, like, a wet ring. I would have died. I would have never coached again in my life. So I was like, you guys, I got to pump for 2 minutes. So I booked it in the locker room while the girls would give them 5 minutes anyways. I was like, I need to pump. So I, like, put on the things real quick, and I was pumping as I was talking to the staff, writing down my second half stop thoughts. And then so I didn't have time to, like, take everything off. So I had, like, the nursing bra, and I had these cups on both sides, right? And so I'm talking to the team, and I have, like, the blanket over. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, you know, they've seen me pump before. So I was like, okay, these are the three adjustments for second half. Like, you couple
this is
off.
Amazing.
Couple
this, during the national championship game. I mean, this is just yeah. phenomenal.
Okay, so I'm sitting there like this with two, but I have, like, the blanket over me, and I'm talking to the team. I tucked it in on top so it didn't fall. It falls. So it falls, and, like, you see, like, my stomach, and you see, like, these two plastic things, and I was like, oh, sorry, guys. I pick it up on four. I'm fucking embarrassed as hell. Excuse the French. And so, like, I pull it up, and, like, I just go back to talking, but everybody started cracking up. Like, they were, and I was like, at least I'm not embarrassed. And they laughed. It, like, broke the ice.
Yeah.
And then after that, I let the girls go out. I had to go, like, take my bra off, put the things, I put the milk on, put it in the fridge. And, like, I'm doing my bra, like, I'm, you know, these nursing bras.
Yeah.
I'm, like, doing my bra as I'm, like, walking out. So I didn't tell Holly, but someone must, I was like, we had a minute left. So I'd, like, book it. And right. someone must, like, she was pumping, you know, like, yeah. I never told. I don't know how she knew that.
Yeah.
Someone I would have never said
someone
that.
Did say you were late because she was pumping.
Yeah.
But I love that she spoke about it and yeah. that you speak about it because yeah. that's the importance of people normalizing it is huge. Like, this is the reality of what we have to go through. And it's not weird. This is it.
No, it's like what we have to do. And, like, we do it all the time. That's why I was kind of like, women do it all the time. Like, I'm sure tons of women have pumped at halftime. But I normally don't. But honestly, like, I normally don't have the baby at an 8 o'clock game.
So that is the college game in 2021. And if you were wondering how it is in the WNBA, well, just know this. This upcoming WNBA season, the league's 25th, marks the first time in history that players will be guaranteed private areas to nurse their babies. Not to mention other basics like full paid maternity leave and reimbursement for fertility support and adoption fees and accommodations for kids who are traveling with their moms who just happen to play in the WNBA. It is a whole new blueprint for working mothers at long last. So, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there from us here at ESPN Daily. And on behalf of all the dads, thank you. And sorry for being an idiot. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Antel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Max Brodsky, Jacob Pinter, Ilana Strauss, and Jackson Udjelo. I'll talk to you Monday.